The seventh chapter of Yeshayahu, which is the second half of the Haftarah for Parshat Yitro, describes an event that happened in the days of King Ahaz. When exactly did this event happen? Yeshayahu Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph reads, Vayihi bimei Ahaz, in the days of Ahaz, Ben Yotam ben Uzziyahu Melech Yehuda. This event took place in the days of King Ahaz, the son of Yotam, and the grandson of Uzziyahu, the king of Yehuda. Uzziyahu was well known as a wealthy king who ruled for many years. Ahaz is his grandson and the son of Yotam. It happens in the days of Ahaz, but in what year? Pasuk Aleph continues that Pekach ben Remaliahu came to attack Ahaz. Pekach ben Remaliahu is the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and his rule overlapped almost perfectly with the rule of Yotam, Ahaz's father. When considering the overlap of the various kings, in the 15th chapter of Melachim Bet, we see that Yotam and Pekach become king in roughly the same year. Now, Pekach is king for 20 years and Yotam for 16, which means almost all of Pekach's rule overlaps with the rule of Yotam, Ahaz's father. Thus, the events of this chapter and this Haftarah must take place in the end of Pekach's rule, in the last 4 years, and the start of the rule of Ahaz. We can wonder to ourselves, what was the implication of the varied level of experience between the two kings? Pekach of the north was a veteran king who had already ruled for 16 years. He knew about politics and alliances, wars, and generals. On the other hand, Ahaz was a neophyte. He had just been coronated king. He might be still short-sighted. He might not yet be accustomed to taking the wider picture, which would be expected of a king. The upcoming conflict between these two kings would not be a conflict of equals. Ahaz is much less experienced than Pekah. We've discussed the when of this prophecy. It dates to the first year of Ahaz and the 17th or fourth to last year of Pekah. Now let's talk more about the who. We learn that Pekah is aided by Ritzin Melech Aram, Ritzin, the king of Aram, a country northeast of Israel in modern-day Syria, and they both united in a common pursuit against Ahaz. To any student of the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, this might come to be seen as a surprise. Aram and Yisrael had numerous altercations with each other throughout the times of the kings, as is related in both Melachim Aleph and Melachim Bet. Ahav's kingship is full with fights with Ben-Hadad. Many of the kings in that time period fight Aram. So it is a surprise that here, for the first time that we can recall, Aram and the northern kingdom unite together. There must have been a common enemy which scared them. It drove two enemies into an alliance together. We've discussed when this happens. We've discussed who is involved in this prophecy. Now let's discuss where. The next word in the first pasuk of Perek Zayin, is Yerushalayim. these two united nations, the North and Aram, go and reach Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, the capital of the South. These countries had not just taken arms to attempt to attack the South. They appear to have even entered the territory of the South, reaching Yerushalayim. The when is the first year of Ahaz's kingship. The who is the North and Aram. The where is Yerushalayim. What did they do? The verse ends, La milchama aleha. They came to go to war against Yerushalayim. In the end, lo yachol lihilachem aleha, they do not take Yerushalayim, but that is their attempted goal. When Ahaz hears this, vayugad lebeit David lemor, nacha Aram al Ephraim, the king from the house of David hears that now Aram is aligned with the north, with Ephraim. And now we get a simile. Vayana levavo ulevav amo, and his heart and the heart of his nation shook. Kinoa atzeyar mipnei ruach, like the trees of the forest shake before the wind. Ahaz is rightfully scared. Here he is in the first year of his kingship, the first year of his reign. And he is being attacked by two mighty nations who entered his territory and got as far as Yerushalayim. The simile imagines his heart beating as trees of the forest shake in front of the wind. We understand the who, the what, the where, and the when, but we don't understand the why. Why did these two nations attack the South, attack Yerushalayim? There aren't many examples in which the Northern Kingdom attempt to conquer and overtake the Southern Kingdom. Perhaps they recognized a certain kingship between the North and the South, or perhaps the two countries were evenly matched, and therefore none of the two countries would be able to overtake the other. But this is a rare event. A hint as to why this happens is revealed in Pasuk Hei. Yan kia'at alecha Aram ra'a, Ephraim uven remalyahu lemor. For Aram and the northern kingdom has plotted something against the Jews of the south. Na'ale b'yuda unikitzene univake'ena eleinu. Eleinu in Hebrew means towards us. Their goal is to come to the south and turn it towards us. And their primary goal, v'namlich melech betocha, and to put a new king into the kingdom, et ben taval. Most commentaries say ben taval is not a name of somebody. It is a term that is used to refer to a puppet king. A puppet king is when there is a country that you conquer, but you allow them to continue to govern themselves. You don't annex their territory and make it part of your own. There is a governor who governs the area on your behalf. It seems as though the North and Aram, Pekah and Ritzin, are less interested in territorial ambition to conquer the South and gain all of that territory. They're less interested in taking the wealth of the North, of the South. What they're really interested is in replacing the king. But why? Why go all the way to Jerusalem just to replace King Ahaz and replace him with a puppet king, if not to take gold and silver from the country, if not to take its territory as your own. Answers to these questions can be considered when we realize what exactly was going on in the Middle East at the time. Sure, the Assyrian Empire has been growing and ascending. In the early days of King Uzziahu, Ahaz's grandfather, the Tanakh doesn't even talk about the Assyrians. If the Assyrians' empire is growing, it's an empire farther away, near the Euphrates River, nowhere near Israel. However, in the decades since, the Assyrian Empire has been growing, and the Assyrians have been coming closer and closer to Jerusalem. In the end of the days of Uzziahu, the Assyrians took significant amounts of territory from both Aram and from the north. Sefer Melachim details how a number of the northernmost cities of the northern kingdom and the ones who are most east, we learn that the tribes of Reuven and Gad, who were east of the Jordan River, were already exiled by the Assyrians by this time. Large sections of Aram were also taken by the Assyrians. It actually would seem like a surprise, with the Assyrians threatening both Ahaz and the north from their north, that they would go to the south to conquer. Why would you try to expand your territory and begin a military campaign against a third nation when the greater threat, the Assyrians, is staring at you in the face? Putting these two pieces of the puzzle together, it seems that the Northern Kingdom and Aram are actually not trying to conquer the South. They actually need the South and its resources to join them in the fight against the Assyrians. Pekah is presently ready to fight the Assyrians, as is Ritzin, as is Aram. They're ready to fight the Assyrians, and they want the South to be able to send troops and resources to aid them in their fight. They turn to Ahaz and they say to him, "Ahaz, we need your help. We need you to help us to join our alliance against the Assyrians." But Ahaz says no. Showing short-sighted thinking, Ahaz says, "The Assyrians are not my enemy. They are far away. They are threatening you, Pekah, the north, but they're not threatening me yet. I don't see the Assyrians as my enemy, and I will not join your alliance to fight against Ashur, against the Assyrian kingdom." Now we understand why Ritzin, king of Aram, and Pekah, king of northern Israel, are attacking the south and looking to replace the king with a puppet. They don't want to annex the territory of the south, but they want a leader in the south who is sympathetic to their concerns. They want a leader in the south who will join them against the Assyrians. Ahaz is in his first year as king. He's thinking very short-sightedly. He doesn't realize that Ashur is the long-term threat, and he should not be willing to fight against the north. Instead, he should join their alliance, or at least pledge neutrality, and not see the north as the enemy. Kings, particularly ones who are less religiously inspired, generally believe that they should make choices based on what seems to be the best outcome for them. And they usually do not ask Hashem or a prophet for spiritual guidance as to how they should act. In this case, Yeshayahu goes to Ahaz, the prophet at the time, Yeshayahu comes, to give him guidance what to do. Yeshayahu's guidance is critical, not just because he is telling Ahaz what to do, but also because when the south is saved, Yeshayahu wants everyone to know that it came because God predicted it, and not because of Ahaz's military insight or political acumen. Going back now to Pasuk Gimel, Vayomar Hashem el Yeshayahu, God says to Yeshayahu, Say na likrat Ahaz, go out to visit Ahaz, Ata, you, Yeshayahu, you should go, U'she'ar Yashuv Benecha, and your son, She'ar Yashuv. It must have been take your child to work day. Yeshayahu goes to meet the king with his son, She'ar Yashuv. This is an unusual name for a biblical figure. It's a two-word name, and it's actually a phrase more than a name. She'ar Yashuv literally translates, the remnant will return. And it appears that this child, She'ar Yashuv, was actually named to recall Yeshayahu's prophecies. Already a few times in the original six chapters of Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu has given the prediction of the near destruction of the entirety of the south of Yehudah, and a she'ar, a small remnant, who will, yashuv, return and flourish in the future. To give one example of many, only a few verses earlier in the Navi, in Perek Vav, although decades earlier in the chronology, Yeshayahu had predicted that only roughly 5% of the population of the Jewish people would be left. Ke'ela v'chalon asher b'shalechet, like trees in shalechet in fall, where they lose most of their volume with all the leaves falling off, and the small branches are all that remain. Those branches will one day grow again. The she'ar, the remnant, will yashuv grow and flourish. And Yeshayahu's older son is named She'ar Yashuv to recall those prophecies. Almost as if whenever somebody would meet She'ar Yashuv, whenever they would see him playing on the playground or sitting in the sandbox, they would remember his name and remember Yeshayahu's prophetic mission and larger vision. She'ar Yashuv, a remnant will return, but almost the entirety of the Jewish people will be destroyed. Later in this chapter, Perek Zayin, after the Haftorah concludes, this idea of She'ar Yashuv and the near destruction of Yehudah is repeated by Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu says in Pasuk Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin, in short time, Te'azev ha'adama asher atakatz mipnei shnei melacheha. The countries of these two kings will shortly no longer be a concern. What is the concern? Yavi Hashem Alecha, God will instead bring against you, V'al Amecha, and against your nation, V'al Beit Avicha, and your father's house, Yamim Asher Lo Ba'u, days that have never come, L'miyom Sur Ephraim Me'al Yehudah, days so bad that have not even been encountered since the northern and southern tribes separated into two kingdoms. What? Ace Melech Ashur, the king of the Assyrians. She'ar Yashuv is a reminder to Ahaz that the Assyrian threat is the real threat. Ahaz should not make any short-sighted decision in opposing these two countries if it fails to account for the long-term problem, which is the Assyrian country, which will nearly destroy the entire Jewish people. Where does Yeshayahu meet Ahaz? Pasuk Gimel continues that Yeshayahu met Ahaz El Kitzei Tala Tabrecha HaElyona. Yeshayahu met Ahaz in the upper pool, El Mesilat Dechoves, which was where the Kvisa, the laundry, was undertaken. Why does the prophet meet the king in the laundry pool? Why doesn't he meet him in the palace? In the palace, the king is decked out in royalty. He sits on the throne, a position of authority. And the prophet, probably forced to enter behind many guards and soldiers, is in a position of disadvantage. Perhaps by going to a field where laundry is done, the king and prophet are on more equal footing. And as a result, the message will have greater impact. Alternatively, perhaps the reason why they meet in the laundry field is that this is a public place. Yeshayahu may know that Ahaz is not going to listen to his message. Yeshayahu may know that Ahaz's heart is not aligned with the Jewish religion. Therefore, Yeshayahu makes sure to give this message in public. So even if Ahaz doesn't listen, the rest of the Jewish people will listen. Part of the proof that Yeshayahu's true audience may have been the rest of the Jewish people is from later on in the chapter. After the Haftarah ends in Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph, Yeshayahu goes to Ahaz and asks him to choose a sign. God will give him a sign that the salvation of the south and the safety of Yerushalayim was preordained by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeshayahu offers him a sign in the heavens, Hagbea Lamala, or a low sign, Ha'amek Sha'ala, in the valleys. Normally, if somebody is offered a sign from God, they'll quickly respond with yes, for sure. But Ahaz responds by saying, Lo eshal v'lo anaseh et Hashem. I will not ask for a sign. And lo anaseh, I will not test God. Or possibly, from the word nes or banner, I won't raise the banner of God. Ahaz is so certain that God will not save him. Ahaz is so clear and firm in his conviction that if he's saved, it will be based on his own insight, that he refuses to even take a sign. If Ahaz is given a sign that the salvation comes from God and the sign comes true, people will say that God was behind the salvation and not Ahaz. So Ahaz says, I refuse to ask for a sign. He is so fallen, so disconnected, so separated from the Jewish religion. Even when a sign is offered to him for a prophet, he refuses to accept the sign. Yeshayahu quickly responds, Shimuna Beit David, Hame'at Mikem Halot Anashim Kitalu Gamet Elokai. Yeshayahu is bothered and says, I can't believe that you are so combative against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, God gives a sign to Ahaz anyway, a five-part sign. A young woman, Hara, will become pregnant. That's the first part of the sign. The allotted Ben, she will have a son, the second part of the sign. The Karashimo Immanuel, and that son will be named Immanuel, God is with us. The name of the child, God is with us, signaling that even in difficult times, God remains with the Jewish people. Around the time when the child is Lidato Maos Berao Bechor Betov, when the child is old enough to know the difference between good and bad, roughly 2 years, that's when the other nations will leave, and the child will eat chema udvash, butter and honey, as a sign of safety and prosperity. Butter and honey are things that you only eat in times of wealth. Chema is butter. When you have extra time and extra milk, you turn the milk into butter so that it will last. Dvash also comes through the processing of fruit. When you have extra fruit and extra time, you process it, you dry it to take out the honey. In times of wealth and prosperity, people have extra milk, extra fruit, and so they produce butter and honey. If a war was still going on when this child is 2 years old, 3 years later, given 9 months for the pregnancy and 2 years for the child, if there was still a war going on, people would be desperately trying for food. There wouldn't be excess butter and honey going around. Yeshayahu provides this sign, but Ahaz doesn't want it. He wants the Jewish people to hear the sign, so that when all of they see this young child, Immanuel, when they see Immanuel turning two, when they see Immanuel eating butter and honey, they will recognize and realize that the salvation has come from Hashem. This sign is not miraculous. People sometimes think that any sign from a prophet must involve a miracle. There's nothing miraculous in a child being born, the child being named Immanuel, and the child growing up to know the difference between good and bad. There's no violation of nature here. But because the prophet predicts the timing of the salvation, because the prophet predicts that the fight with the north will end 3 years from now, it operates as a sign, because when the south is saved at exactly that time, everyone will know that the salvation came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For this reason, Yeshayahu meets the king in the public place, in the place where they did laundry. That way, everybody who attends will see and hear the sign of the prophet. And when the Jews are saved, they will know that the salvation came from God. We don't know exactly where this laundry pool was. Scholars have a difference of opinion as to where exactly the pool was located. Some people say it would needed to have been outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem. Some say it was north of what is today the Temple Mount. At the time, the water that was used by the residents of Jerusalem emerged from something called the Gihon Spring. It's helpful to imagine the city of Jerusalem at the time and the Temple Mount as a rectangle on top of a triangle. Imagine the Temple Mount shaped as a rectangle, due north of what was then Yerushalayim, a triangle beneath the Temple Mount, with a point in the Valley of Ben Hinnom down below. Most of what was Yerushalayim at the time is actually outside the walls of the old city today. In those days, most of the old city was actually outside of Yerushalayim, and people only lived in Ir David, the city of Jerusalem, which was at the time south of the Temple Mount. East of both the Temple Mount and Yerushalayim is the Kidron Valley, and in the Kidron Valley was a spring, the Gihon Spring. The Gihon Spring provides water for the residents of Yerushalayim. The laundry was probably not done in the Gihon Spring. Usually, drinking water and laundry water are separate and are done at separate locations. So therefore, this Sdeh Koves, this laundry field, was probably not found at the Gihon Spring, but it may have been found somewhere near it, and it may have been outside the walls of Yerushalayim, as some scholars believe. Yeshayahu says to Ahaz in Pasuk Dalet, do not worry about the north and Aram. Hishamer v'hashket, be quiet and be guarded. Al tira, do not fear. Levavcha al yerach, your heart shouldn't. Your heart shouldn't be weakened. And now we have a metaphor. Mishnez Navo Taudim Hashenim Ha'ela, from these two smoking tails, the north and Aram here are compared to tails, which are in the back of the animal, the least scary part of the animal, and they're compared to smoke. The smoke is scary because it reminds you of a fire, but the actual danger posed by the smoke is actually minimal. Yeshayahu says to Ahaz, do not be scared of the north. Do not be scared of Aram. Do not be scared of either of these nations. And don't make a miscalculation. Don't forget that the Assyrians are your real enemy. These other nations are not going to pose a threat. Yeshayahu actually quotes from the prophecies of Amos in the upcoming verses. Somewhere in the vicinity of 40 years previously, Amos had promised the north that they were going to be destroyed. The book of Amos doesn't say when the north is going to be destroyed. It's not written in the book. But it appears as though Amos had given a set amount of time of 65 years before the north was going to be destroyed. We know from Amos that when he told the north that they would be destroyed, the people mocked him. And surely, if the prophet said they were going to be destroyed in 65 years, more than a lifetime, the people would not be energized to respond. But now, roughly 40 years later, the idea that the north would be destroyed in 65 years was actually something much sooner. Yeshayahu says, the north is a short-term threat. I will protect you from the north, and in 3 years, they will be far away from you, and they will not be a threat any longer. And in a few decades, the Assyrians will destroy the north as part of their conquest. The real enemy is the Assyrians. And Yeshayahu says to Ahaz, please, please, Do not make any rash decisions. Don't forget about the long-term threat by being hyper-focused on the short-term threat. Don't see the North as the enemy. See the Assyrians as the enemy. And realize that God is behind this. God has a plan. When you are saved from the North, it will be because God wanted it to happen. When the Assyrians destroy the North, it will be because God wanted it to happen. And when the Assyrians come and attack you, that too is part of God's plan. The prophet tries to give guidance to the king. The king, sadly, is not interested in hearing any of it. He disregards the prophet's message, refuses to accept a sign, and may make an unfortunate decision as he faces the challenges of the North and Aram.